on. Please continue.
I'll start from the beginning. I attended the weekend convention here in town, but throughout the summer I've been working shift work, so I wasn't able to listen in when it was actually going on. I would catch it the next day. And what I found for myself was that they verified how totally asleep the machine is, no matter what the exercise was and how hard it was, the resistance to working some of them. And also that there was a, it made me somewhat accountable in that there was a time frame and everyone was doing this exercise, whereas normally I don't hold myself that accountable. So part of it is the idea of holding oneself accountable for the work suggested in the exercises. How does that strike everyone or anyone?
Mm-hmm. Diana, it feels like you've got something. I don't know why. If I'm wrong, that's fine.
Yeah, I was just sitting with that one, T. Kind of pondering. And I was in partial agreement with David. I would say the exercises in some ways created accountability, but for me it was more just some form of expression and usefulness. I'm literally physically sort of half asleep, so I'm sort of fading in and out of the conversation, and I happen to spark back up when you guys said accountability, and I was just kind of sort of swimming with that.
It's because we're accountants.
I think I'm sleepy on a lot of levels tonight.
Well, one of the things that is an antidote to what Ken is talking about is that when we do the exercise by ourselves, there isn't really an outside agency, in a sense, holding us accountable. Mm-hmm. And we're able to say, oh, yeah, I did the exercise. But when you're in group, you have a different mode.
Or you don't say, I did it. You go, I'm not going to do it and no one will ever know.
Well, it's not even that direct. It says, oh, I did it. And you did virtually nothing. When we did the exercises before the class several years ago, people, in a sense, had to bring their exercise. They committed, here is how I'm going to do it. Then they'd do it for a week, and then they came back to the class and said, here's how I did that exercise. So the class was depending on them. It took it to a different level, just a different way of doing it. But that's a good comment, Ken, and thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Other questions, comments, insights, considerations?
Well, if there's nothing else, then I could bring out my prepared lecture on cleaning products.
Yay!
It's about 2.5 hours long, and I'll read for the next 2.5 hours, and then we can enter into a vibrant discussion about the various products and my testing thereof.
In case anybody's on the...
with knowledge.
If somebody's just getting on the tape for the first time because it's on the top of the website, this is an ongoing group joke.
To some, it's a joke.
I was...
Oh, Silverdale said, this will really be a practical work on self. A practical work cleaning yourself up. Maybe some of the cleaning agents could have to do with body care.
Is the sparkling body more awake then? Is this what we're saying?
Oh, boy.
And Silverdale added, of all 24 exercises, but Silverdale, I'm not entirely sure what you mean.
he's talking about the cleaning exercise.
Yeah. I was going to share with you, and I open up to your experience, is regarding the pond. And I always, I was thinking in the pond in the negative emotions, or, you know, usually when something or somebody or an event triggers on me some negative reaction. But so I find myself in this situation in which I had to give a new to somebody who was very painful to me to do that. And so I'm waiting for the moment, planning the moment when to do it. And I do it. And obviously it felt really bad. So it wasn't a situation in which somebody's bothering me, or, you know, that my that I'm reacting negatively to somebody or something in resistance. It's really a bad news, and there is a lot of attachment there.
Yeah.
And it's an emotional thing, definitely. And I am immersed in that feeling, you know, as I'm saying this, and the person too. And it was really heavy, really, really heavy.
Yeah.
And I think we had the right to feel that. And we had the right to feel that. It is not an emotion that you told me something and I react negatively to you. It's not that.
Okay.
It is something that, you know, we share a lot of things with this person, and I said, well, that's it. This cannot go anymore. And so I did this, and I was immersed in this feeling. I was really sad. I felt so sad. And I said, I wonder if I can practice the palm here. Somehow I had my attention to to practice the palm. But I wasn't sure if that kind of emotion, it's like when somebody dies in your family, you feel bad. You know what I mean? You got the right to feel bad. That kind of emotion I'm talking about.
What do you mean when you say that you have the right to feel bad? What does that mean to you?
Well, imagine that somebody, you know, suppose that you spend 30 days or 30 years of your life with somebody, and then you have to let go of that person. I mean, there's many years together, many years of having things together, of love, of good moments, and you have to let go of somebody. So you definitely, I think you got the right to say, well, I really feel bad because we have had great things, and, well, the thing has to move on now.
Yes, it's really natural.
That way, I am.
It's really, really natural to feel grief in a situation like that. So, go ahead.
That's what I mean. You got the right of those. You get the right to feel bad.
Right, but see, when you say we have the right, a lot of people, we always have the right to feel whatever we want to feel. And so some people feel that when they blame other people for the triggers and they feel maybe angry all the time, and they have the right to feel angry all the time. But when you say the right, it sounds like a need for justification for the feeling. And I think there's a difference between rationalizing in one's mind and saying, I have the right, intellectually I know I have the right to feel what I want, and that could be for a resistance, versus the very natural feeling that you have grief that's coming up in a situation like you're talking about.
Exactly. Well, maybe thank you, Teresa. Maybe I expressed myself in the wrong way. There was a natural grief on me. That was the feeling.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to say it's the wrong way. And it can sometimes just be the use of language, but because there's a lot of us, if it was just you and me, maybe I would just let that go by. But because there's a group here and people may hear it that way, I wanted to be careful about the words, right?
Cool, yeah, I get it. I see where you're coming from, yeah. So that's the situation. And I said, although I am in a natural grief, I said, I wanted this, I can practice the palm here. I wasn't sure because maybe it was okay for me to feel that grief, that natural thing. It was natural, but there was nothing to fight against it. But I said, I wonder if I can detach myself enough to get out of this eye of the hurricane of the motion, whether it's natural or not. And I make myself so present in that moment that it was, and it was like a bucket of cold water that came over me, and it was like the whole emotion was gone.
Wow.
I just stayed totally present there, like just watching this person, almost like not like a stranger, but I was out of the thing. It was like somebody dropped me a bucket of water inside of me, so the disidentification just by being in the moment, and my attention was focused just on this person and me saying something.
Was that a flat place from shutting down, or was that an open place from letting go?
I don't know what it was. I have that. The only thing that made myself is get out of the spell of the motion, and I get myself so present in that moment, observing what was happening around me. I stop identifying me with the right or the naturality of the grief or whatever. And I don't know if it was the pond, the exercise that I did, or I don't know really what happened. I'm just sharing with you something that happened to me within that scenario. But it did really produce me a level of detachment. I disidentified with emotion. And obviously the thing came back later on because my attention came back again to identify. But anyways, what do you think about that?
I think you're doing really good self-observation, and you're making some real work efforts to have a response that's not automatic. And I think that when we have a real grief, we can do the pond exercise, and maybe it shifts in the moment, and then maybe some more wells up in another moment, and maybe we do it again. And if it's a lot of natural feeling there rather than just simply reactive emotion that we're generating, it might take a little bit longer, or we might find ourselves in some deep feeling places while we're doing the pond. That's what I think. What do you think, David?
Because
go ahead.
Okay. To clarify it, because my doubt was that, I say, how could have happened that fast, I said. You know, I just made myself so present. I was present, so I started observing. I disidentified, detached from the emotion. And I said, maybe I'm shutting down. Maybe it's not
what
I'm doing.
Detachment is a tricky word, because there's detachment. A lot of people think of detachment as being cold and aloof, and the opposite of attachment, and that's a reactive state. I think of a detachment as being the neutral position between them, an open state, and I see detachment as a prerequisite for real compassion. Because when you're really, like, think of a monk walking by starving children, and he doesn't have enough money to feed them all, and he's looking at each one of them, and if he has work with one of them, he'll do it. But if he doesn't have any work, he will feel for that child, but he may not be able to make a physical response to the situation. He's going to be detached to know whether it's his work or whether it isn't his work. It doesn't mean he's unfeeling.
Mm-hmm.
Does this make sense?
And it does happen that fast, Guillermo, if you wake up. You literally wake up in the blink of an eye. But I have a suggestion, and that's to just allow it to be undefined in a certain way. And I think some of the words that Teresa she's presenting to you are very valuable as guideposts. But allow it to not be defined for the moment. But now you know your whole being, oddly enough, your sleeping machine too, knows that that's possible. It's on warning, in a sense, that suddenly the whole world can shift and you can be in a different moment. So it'll happen again. You'll be in the same situation where, quote unquote, you should be feeling intense emotions. And you start to, and then boom, you flip into a different space.
Yes, and I may share with you, this happened to me a year ago, something like that, and I was not doing this work literally so objectively over the observation of the machine and with the magnifying glass that we're doing now, but I was crying for some reason, and all of a sudden I remember myself, and I went into a different space of the man that was crying, and I could see the machine, you know, dropping tears, and, you know, it wasn't a big deal, let's say.
Yeah.
I wasn't like an ocean of tears, not at all, but I was definitely crying. And I saw myself from another spot from inside of me, and it looked mechanic. I could see the emotion and that expression in my machine from a different angle. I was, again, detached.
Yeah.
I disidentified with the thing.
That's great. Disidentification is excellent. We just don't want to go so far that we react by shutting the emotion down. We want to open and let it fall through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I see what you mean. Definitely, you don't want to become, you know, another kind of robot.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going from one robot, from one machine to another machine.
That's right. Practice.
Yeah, but in both cases, it was really definitely another spot. It was a different angle that I have discovered. And as you say, David, maybe I should not define what it was, but it was. There was something else there.
Well, sometimes we use words to explore, and sometimes we use words to lock things down and make them into something solid, and we quit exploring. A lot of times, David, you make comments to the effect that, you know, if we define something, then we're going to stop our process. I think that as a person who uses words more frivolously, perhaps, that one can be open in one's process and also articulate it so that the process changes and the words change with it. The words don't have to nail the process into a coffin. The words can just surround it, and then another set of words can surround it as the experience changes. So we have another comment sequence here that I'd like to share. Then Silverdale was saying, I strongly recommend a recently released book called The Reality of Being by Jean de Salzman, S-A-L-Z-M-A-N-N. This book is a roadmap of the Gurdjieff work and greatly illuminates this book, Practical Work on Self. He said, I bought my copy at Barnes & Noble, otherwise you can get it on Amazon. He said, it is an affirmation of my personal efforts over the last 18 years, as well as a resource for the next 5 years. And Mike said, I read a review of it and just put off getting it. Silverdale, it's perhaps the most significant and substantial book in all of the Gurdjieffian literature, in my opinion. Sinhog, quite a recommendation. Silverdale,
wow.
Personally, I think that Gurdjieff wrote the material and Jeannie de Salzman's name was placed on it for marketing reasons. Townsy Girl, Silverdale, is it called The Fourth Way? Silverdale, Jean de Salzman passed away in 1990 at the age of 101, so this book is appearing 20 years posthumously.
Posthumously?
Yeah, okay. Sinhog, The Reality of Being. Silverdale, the title is The Reality of Being, The Fourth Way of Gurdjieff by Jean de Salzman. Okay. So, and then Silverdale, good point, Teresa, referenced the use of words. Thanks for making the reference clear. Any other comments or questions? We're coming to a close here, and the next time that we'll come together, I hope we'll come together as a group, will be for the HBM on October 20th, and I will send out reminders by email. I'd like to encourage you to invite anybody who might like to join us for that course. We'll have I'll send you a web address for the course, and I will also send out reminders, but anybody you think would like to join, it's okay to invite them, and what you can do is just send them a link, but make sure they get on the mailing list. They might need to go to the Practical Work on Self site to get on the mailing list in the short run before I'm able to get a mailing list thing up for the other course. And we'll use the same list.
During the next few weeks, if you would like, you're welcome to send, if you have questions, if you begin to read HBM, or you have additional questions on Practical Work on Self, you're certainly welcome to send those inquiries to me as well.
And I would ask that you might consider putting them in a file or something like that so that we might be able to share them and hit the road running when we start the course, if some of those are appropriate to share.
Okay.
So, if there isn't any other aren't any other questions or comments, then we should probably close for tonight. And I want to really thank everybody for coming and participating and making this a really quality experience. And I want to thank you each for doing your inner work for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Keep that up.
Thank you, too. It was unbelievable. It was a fantastic course. And I will post my comment. Is it still the web Practical Work on the Self page is open to comments, right?
Yes, it's going to stay there.
Okay, so I'll post my comments over there.
Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. David, awesome work. Teresa, all the participants, very grateful. Thank you.
And
I thank
you also. And Teresa, thank you for maintaining that website. It's a lot of work, and I know you put a lot of time into it. And I want to acknowledge the amount of time in your busy schedule that you've shared with this group. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
So just to follow up to make sure I find the right book, we're looking for The Human Body Machine for the next class, yes?
The title of the book is The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus.
I'll send you a link to that. David sent me a link to where to buy it, and I'll send out a link and a reminder shortly about the next class. I'll send that out probably in the next few days.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Let's call it a night.
All right. Good night.
It's a night.
Good
night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.